So good afternoon. Thank you for the invitation. I just recall this movie yesterday when I was sitting here and I was listening to talks about something which is happening 600 kilometers in the Earth, and what you consider above, what you have above 400 kilometers, it's considered to be shallow. So for you, I will be super shallow, because I usually work on crustal rocks, and I will speak about plagioclase. And actually, we don't have the same tools as they have in Hollywood yet, because we cannot travel on a vehicle to the deep earth to study the rocks directly. We have to develop some sophisticated approaches to better understand, that help us to understand rocks or the processes in the earth interior. And what I would like to show you today is a kind of approach and that can help us to infer long-term stress, some information on the long-term stress state in the lithosphere. So the motivation for our work was that one of the current aims is to understand the processes in the Earth interior through predictive geodynamic models. And it, of course, also involves earthquakes. And we have two inputs into the geodynamic models. One is fundamental laws that we don't question, and the other one is rheology, which is the key ingredient that enters the models through constitutive relations. And I would like to speak here about rheology, about rheological parameters, what we know about them, and also what's new there that we can do to infer these rheology parameters. And I will focus on the small scale, on the grain scale, because and which is far away from the large scale processes what some of you are studying. But it's also like coming more and more in the earthquake literature or literature focused on the initiation of plate tectonics also, the need for data or rheology parameters from the small scale, how the stresses are built up just on the small scale, sometimes call it micromechanics of contacts. And that's why I think that the data which I'm going to show you today might be of your interest as well. So rheology is the response of the material on the stress, and we usually plot it on the on this diagram with logarithmic axis, with the strain rate and stress, and this kind of slope here is the stress exponent. I just, for the purpose of visualization for this talk, I just flipped the axis, so this is not n, but 1 over n. And how we get the rheology data nowadays is that we do experiments. And of course, those experiments, they are far away from natural conditions. They are different, they are much faster strain rates, different temperatures, different grain size. And we then extrapolate into geological conditions. And of course, the little uncertainty in the lab can become a large uncertainty at the geological conditions. And also the other point is that we don't have to have a linear behavior here. It can be curved, it can break at one point. So practically, the rheology parameters are the least certain inputs in the geodynamic models or earthquake models, which might have certain consequences. So let's look at or to see how uncertain it can be, let's look at the plagioclase, which is the most abundant and most studied mineral in the crust. And here we compiled all the possible rheology data which we know for dry plagioclase. And because the differences can be not only in the strain rates between the lab conditions and the geological conditions, it can be also temperature, grain size, and so that's why I show here two different grain sizes on the diagrams, which are called deformation maps. Deformation maps where on the vertical axis we have the stress and on the horizontal axis we have temperature. And the different fields, they represent fields with different deformation mechanisms, like a diffusion creep in blue, a dislocation creep in green, and tiles creep in red. And this is like this red rectangle here is representing the geologically relevant conditions. And as I said, I compare the experimentally or the grain size, which they use in experiments, which is much, much smaller than for the grain size which we have in nature. And also the other differences are different data sets for mostly dislocation creep, and also the other problem might be activation energy, which can differ and which can sometimes lead into a very non-intuitive topology of these diagrams. And before I get too emotional about the non-trivial discrepancies connected with the rheological parameters, the key point I want to tell you or show you here is that at high temperatures, at which practically correspond to the experimental conditions, the diagrams agree within, let's say, an error. But when we go towards geological conditions and we look at the grain size, which is more relevant to what we see in microstructures, our natural microstructures, we see that there is no unique consensus on how the plagioclase or how the material behaves towards higher stresses. And this, of course, has important consequences, which sometimes we don't have to be aware. I think that sometimes we are not aware what consequences or what impact the inappropriate rheology which we use can have. And I know that this workshop is focused on intermediate to deep earthquakes, but this is just a comparison that, and this is the summary of all the maps for plagioclase on the stress and strain aid diagram, and you see that there are different, practically, the parameters, the flow law parameters can vary so much that the strength, this is practically the strength of the plagioclase, that can result in completely different geodynamic scenarios. And as I said, this workshop is focused on intermediate and deep earthquakes, but I need to do the detour through the surface. Just to show, because as I said, I'm a little bit I'm a little bit worried about that we are sometimes not aware of real impact of inappropriate on the use of inappropriate rheology parameters. And so let's have a look on the case where we can really directly see the impact or the societal consequences. And we look at the Groningen gas field, which is one of the biggest gas fields in the world. It's in Netherlands. This is the cross section. And the important point I want to make here is that when they started to study it, like maybe 50 years ago, they said, okay, we can use elastic model, there will be no earthquakes, and so on. But this is the seismicity, how it evolves with time, and you see that it's increasing because it's creeping, it's not elastic. So this is like an example of how inappropriate model can affect, and here it has a societal impact because, you know, the engineers are sweating because of the houses which are in this area are not prepared for such a thing. And what I want to say, this is we are close to the surface, so it means that we can measure directly features that we need to measure, and we are not speaking about 10 orders of magnitude in the strain rate between lab and the processes which are happening here, because the difference is like month or year, so it means we have only 1 or 10 orders of magnitudes difference to compare with the rheology experiment. So this just questions are, it led me to the question, okay, how confident are we for conditions in the lower crust? So is there because it would be really useful if we had a constraint, somehow direct constraint at the geologically relevant condition and conditions, and it's like the question is like, is there any hope to get this? So let's look at the rock microstructures. And the last couple of years, me and my team within the ERC project, we focus on studying so-called mechanically controlled microstructures, where in these microstructures the pressure and stress is developed because of the material heterogeneity. And these variations in pressure and stress, they can be even measured nowadays. 5 years ago, when we developed the tools, there was no confirmation, but the analytics, they evolved so much that nowadays we have spectroscopic methods, we have micro diffraction, and we have now newly the high-resolution angle EBSD that can provide, and that practically we can measure the pressure and stress variations. So it means that these microstructures are practically the witnesses of the long-term stress state in the lithosphere. And from mechanics, if we look at, for instance, on the simplest possible mechanically controlled microstructure, which is host inclusion environment, like for instance this coesite in garnet, from mechanics we know how pressure and stress decays. So the question is now, we can do that if we have a tool to infer this information from the microstructures. And now I'm getting to the new approach, which we call the working title unconventional rheometry, because it's unconventional because it's not dependent on any of the extrapolations involved in the current flow laws. And in order to before I get to show you the steps in this unconventional rheometry, I have to introduce or bring you to the a scene of the petrologists, what they are solving, or what we are solving to quantify practically the rock microstructures, because it's important input data for the rheometry. So we practically deal with this guy, which is a chemical potential, and practically you can imagine that the differences in chemical potentials are responsible, for instance, for chemical diffusion. And this is the most common expression for the chemical potential. And the important thing is to see that it depends on pressure, temperature, and composition. And I said we work on grain scale, so we can assume that on that scale, the temperature equilibrium is attained very quickly. So what can vary is the pressure and the composition. So we can have practically two cases where we can have a minerals or microstructure with the zoned, chemically zoned features. And one can be explained from classical point of view, where we deal only with chemistry. If we have a chemically zoned mineral, there would be a difference in chemical potentials, and it would try to diffuse. But we can also have we can have a variations in pressure. And if you have a variations in pressure across the grain, which is a solid solution, we would expect that there would be a redistribution of the chemical material. So the zoning can be practically controlled by the pressure variation. And there was no quantification method that would explain that feature a few years ago, and we focus on developing the quantification tools for these systems under pressure gradients. And we took inspiration for instance, coming from gases, where the nice example is the atmosphere. It's practically you have a system under pressure gradient, there is a pressure gradient here, and you have layers with different densities. The same thing is in hydrocarbons reservoirs, where we have layers. It's a system under pressure gradients in equilibrium, where we have systems with different density. These were gases, these were liquids. And the other, if we go towards the solid, from here are polymers, the same feature, the same. They even use quantification methods for pressure variations in polymers. And when we get to solids, it's with question mark, because it's mostly a target of the current research, for instance, in lithium batteries, and also in geology, to practically quantify these pressure variations, because they can lead to the redistribution of the chemical components in the solid solutions, and thus the chemical zoning. And we practically develop the tool that can quantify the pressure variation in the microstructure, where, like, as I said, the mechanically controlled microstructure, which is like this is a numerical simulation where you put material with different viscosities and you squeeze it. Here is the stress distribution, here is the pressure distribution, and you see that you practically, by the heterogeneity of the material, you develop the stress and pressure perturbation or variations. And in solid solutions, this pressure variation leads to redistribution of the material. This is an example of plagioclase, where you put the higher density phase towards higher pressure edge of the microstructure, and the lower density end member or component goes to the lower pressure edge of the microstructure. And of course, when we look at the chemical potential equation, we can then, because we know the composition, we can then quantify the pressure profile, the pressure variation across the grain. And this is, that's why I wanted to explain here what's the on the background of this method, because this is the pressure values are the important inputs in the unconventional rheometry. So let's go to the key steps of our rheology tool. So the first step is practically completely independent of the current or the classical rheology extrapolations, because it's based on equilibrium thermodynamics, and we derive from the zoned mineral, we derive pressure profile. We get a pressure profile. And then from equilibrium thermodynamics, we get to classical mechanics, and we have two steps. We practically use the force balance equation because we have a pressure profile. So we can practically use this to get to transform the pressure to stress, differential stress. And then we use a continuity equation for incompressible case, because we assume steady state, to practically get the strain rate information, where we put it on the if we put it, we don't get absolute value of strain rate, but it does not matter, because on the if we put it on the log-log diagram, we assume the inclusion host environment, we have radial coordinates, we practically get the decay of the stress and strain rates. So we practically get the slope, it means the stress exponent, on this diagram directly from natural microstructures, and it's independent of the classical rheology extrapolations. So we, as I said, we can get from the log-log space, we can get the stress exponent, where if we look at how it decays, how it behaves across the microstructure, here is the reddish part is here. It means that we are close to the inclusion. This is the decay of the stress exponent across the grain. And if we look at the semi-log space, we can derive critical stress, which is practically the boundary between Newtonian and nonlinear behavior. So now let's look at this, how the N decays with the space. We look at that. This is an example of what you can derive. Now I don't know how to get it back. Yeah, this is how I will show you the data derived from one of the cases of the zone mineral, and this is how it looks like on the log-log diagram. And you see that normally from experiments you get 1 point per experiment. Here we got from one grain the whole range of values, so we can practically derive the power law, the stress exponent. And as I said, now we get to the problem, because we get to the point where I said we don't get absolute values of a strain rate. And so once we get the slope, now we can speculate, because we practically can shift this line across the range along the horizontal axis, which is the strain rate. And before I go to this game and tell you the best fit we found, I want to put on the background these known things. Like, this is the diffusion creep line, this is the dislocation creep line, and this is a Pyros creep where we have only one data point so far for plagioclase. So now let's go to the game. As I said, we have this slope, but we don't have. We are now searching for the absolute value of the strain rate, and so we can put it like practically completely towards very slow strain rates, where it is very close to the where the diffusion creep is dominant. And you see, first of all, it does not correspond to the slope of the known diffusion creep data. And when we explore this case, we also got unrealistically high stresses, which we have no indication for such stresses from independent studies. So let's look at completely the other and remember, like if when we put it completely to the fast events, there, actually I can put this, yes. In this case, we practically, the slope, the stress drop is too steep. So it would practically not be in agreement with what we know, for instance, with gravity potential energy studies. It would be practically too weak. The rock would be too weak to hold the mountains. So the reality is somewhere in between. And we got the best fit when we were near the region of the dislocation creep line. You can already see that it's very similar in the slope. We also get the majority of the data on the stress exponents were between 2 to 3. And it was independent on grain size. So we, based on the fit or our exploration, we are somewhere here. And then if we did the best fit through our data and connected with the measured point for the Pyros creep, and so this is how it looks like, our best fit. And then we compare it with these two lines, which are practically the extrapolation, the rheology extrapolations from the maps and the deformation maps I show you. There are two, like how they are extrapolated from the lab data. There are two lines because there are two different data sets for dislocation creep, the only two that are existing. And this is, I think, very important information for also earthquake community, because what we, especially intermediate earthquake, or maybe deep, I don't know, because what we see here that the stress build up much faster, or there is a much bigger, much steeper, sorry, stress build up. And it also shows that the rheology is much stronger than what was previously like documented by the experimental or the extrapolations. So to conclude this is that we have mechanically controlled microstructures, and they can provide information on the stress state, on the long-term stress state in the geological materials. And this method practically uses samples directly from nature. So it means we deal with natural temperatures, natural grain size, and time scales. And the beauty of that method is practically that it's completely independent of conventional constitutive laws, so because it's only based on equilibrium thermodynamics and classical mechanics. And of course, this was an example on plagioclase, but this is applicable to any solid solution, like for instance in olivine, on olivine or pyroxene. So I would finish here.